This is a special edition of Macro Voices with hedge fund manager Eric Townsend, the premier financial podcast targeting professional finance, high net worth individuals, family offices, and other sophisticated investors. Now, for this special edition of Macro Voices, here's hedge fund manager Eric Townsend.
Macro Voices All-Stars Episode 52 was recorded on September 3rd, 2019. I'm Eric Townsend. All-Star Brent Johnson, founder of Santiago Capital, is back with us today. This episode of Macro Voices All-Stars is brought to you by TopTradersUnplugged.com, the only podcast dedicated to quant and rules-based investing. And right now, they're offering Macro Voices listeners a free book called The Many Flavors of Trend Following. I'll let you know how to claim it at the end of this episode. Brent, I want to start with the U.S. dollar. You and I have both been predicting for quite a while that the dollar was going to break out and to the upside. And quite a few times now, that started to happen. And then the president of the United States does something kind of crazy, or at least unprecedented, and it ends up with the dollar suddenly pulling back dramatically. We saw the beginnings of that this time around with the latest China escalation. But, you know, I noticed that the knee-jerk down on the dollar index, at least, relative to other currencies, hasn't been as big each time. And now we're seeing the breakout really continuing to follow through, despite the fact that there's more rhetoric in the system about China. So are we finally getting to the point where that dollar breakout that you and I have expected is unstoppable? And I guess what's really on my mind is, wait a minute, the president's been very clear that he doesn't like the dollar strength. There's a lot of things he hasn't done yet, and he's the kind of guy who's not willing to try unconventional policy action. So what could happen next to derail the dollar?
Well, that's a very good question. And, you know, I think when people over the last week have started talking about the dollar breakout is finally here, you know, and that is true on the DXY. And listen, I focus on the DXY as well because it is the subcomponents are two of our biggest competitors as far as the currency goes, which is the yen and the euro. You know, but if you're focused solely on the DXY, you're really missing the broader picture. If you look around the world, almost every currency is down versus the dollar this year. You know, the Canadian dollar is down 5%. The Danish krone is down 7%. The British pound is down 9%. The Swedish krone is down 15%. And that's just in Europe. Go over to South America and the Chilean peso is down 15%. The Colombian peso is down 14%. You know, the Philippine peso is down 5%. The Chinese renminbi is down 9%. So, you know, you look around the world and the dollar breakout's been here for a while, but it's just now breaking out on the majors. And we've been talking about this for a long time, and, you know, it's finally happening. And I hope people, if nothing else, even if you don't subscribe to the thesis, and even if you don't believe that the dollar is going higher, I hope you've at least sat back and thought about what if it did happen. Because, you know, as you know, Eric, I do think it's going to happen, and I think it's going to have major consequences. So I think this is just getting started. I think a lot of people out there think maybe the dollar could rally to 100 and then roll back over. I don't think that's going to be the case. I think it's going to go much, much higher. Now, as regards to Trump and what he could do, listen, he's always going to complain about something. And he's always, you know, going to do things in an unconventional way. And when somebody tells him he can't do it, it's probably just going to make him try to do it more. So it won't surprise me at all if he comes back out and, you know, tries to talk the dollar down again. But here's the thing is, even if they came out with an official coordinated policy to weaken the dollar, I'm not entirely sure it would work. And let me tell you why that is. So the one way that they could absolutely devalue the dollar is if they would devalue it versus gold. But then you're back on a gold standard. And despite what a number of people think, I do not think that Trump in any way wants a gold standard, at least not while he's the president. You know, the last thing he wants is somebody putting control on him. And, you know, a gold standard is the ultimate control. So I just don't buy that he wants a gold standard. Now, what else could they do? Well, he could have Steve Mnuchin at Treasury in some kind of a coordinated fashion with the Fed or whoever it is, you know, go out and buy euros, buy yen, and sell dollars, right? And they could spend, you know, I don't know how much money's in the exchange stabilization fund, but they could, let's say they spend multiple billions to do that. What's the consequence of them doing that? Okay, so what happens is the dollar falls. Let's say the dollar goes from 99 back to 89 or 85 or whatever it is over the next 6 months. Well, that also means that the euro has now gone from 110 to 125 or 130. It means the yen has gone from 105 to 90. Now, let's look at those two economies, or not to mention what happens to the yuan, right? The yuan goes to, you know, six or whatever it is. Now think about what's going on in those economies for the last, you'll call it 5 to 10 years. Europe hasn't raised interest rates since, I think, 2007. Japan has been doing MMT for the better part of 20 years. Now, all of a sudden, they're just going to sit back and let their currencies appreciate 15 or 20% and not fight back. Or let's say that they don't fight back. What do you think is going to happen to their economies? Their economies are on life support already, especially Europe. Now, all of a sudden, they're going to be able to get out of their malaise with the euro appreciating 15, 20%. I just don't see it. So while I think, you know, doing something official in the short term could certainly work in the short term, I think 6 months to a year, we're right back where we started. So I just don't see how they're going to get this thing under control. Now, that doesn't mean they're not going to try. I don't think that they're just going to sit back and let the dollar go through the roof and there's not going to be any measures taken. But, you know, to me, it's kind of the antithesis of 2008. They didn't want 2008 to happen either. And they came out with a number of different policies and procedures and bond buying programs and guarantees. But you know what? The S&P still went to 666. Despite all their efforts. So just because there's an official move against something doesn't necessarily mean that that official move is going to be successful. So, you know, I think we're just getting started with this dollar move. And I think the next year to 2 years are going to be just absolutely nuts.
Well, Brent, I couldn't agree more mostly with what you say. The place where maybe we see it a little differently is I just think that this dollar appreciation, that both you and I agree on the fundamentals of what's driving it and why it is set to really, really take off from here, it's going to be an invitation for a lot of people to look for ways to counter it. And it seems like as we come into an election year with all of the additional political backing that modern monetary theory, MMT, has gotten, it seems to me that this is just further fanning the flames where the MMT proponents can say, look, we've got a problem with a strong dollar. And if there's anyone that I have confidence in who has the ability to lower the value of the dollar, it's the MMTers. They know what to do. Do we need to be concerned that maybe what the real effect of the dollar rally is going to be is it's going to add fuel to the fire that just makes it that much more likely for MMT to be adopted politically as policy? And I think that that would have an arresting effect on the dollar rally.
Well, I think, you know, it's a very good point. And I do think that the MMT crowd is going to get louder and louder. And I think we're at the beginning stages of an epic battle between the Fed and the MMTers. You know, the Fed is not going to want to give away control of the dollar and monetary policy, you know, but the MMTers are going to say, look what you've done. You haven't done a good job. We're going to do it for you. So I do agree with you on that. The one thing I would say is that Europe's going to do the same thing. Japan's going to do the same thing. So, you know, if it was US doing MMT in a bubble, then absolutely the dollar's going lower. But I'm just not convinced that these people can do it. I've never seen a government or a monetary authority act ahead of time to ward off something where it was successful rather than letting it get to a crisis stage first. And, you know, the dollar falling is not the crisis. The dollar spiking is the crisis.
Let's move on to gold, because you and I, we can congratulate ourselves all day long for being right about the dollar, but we both thought when gold was at 1345 or so that 1350 was looking like pretty formidable resistance. We didn't really think that breakout was ready to come because of what we saw coming for the dollar. Well, we were right about the dollar, but gold has been through the roof. And then after the big move up, I thought, okay, there's got to be a pullback coming here. I do regret being wrong in that call. I'm looking for the pullback to buy some gold. I've already got some gold, but I'd like to have more. I thought that the dollar was going to break out, which is what we've seen in the last few days, at least early this week when we recorded this interview. And I thought that that was going to result in a pullback, and maybe not all the way down to 1350, but some kind of significant pullback in gold. And it hasn't come yet. Is it still coming? Or is it time to throw in the towel and chase this?
Well, there's two ways to answer that. And, you know, I think I said the last time I was on here that, listen, I got this gold breakout wrong. I did not think it was going to happen. I thought that the 1370 range was going to be very significant resistance, but that if it got through it, we'd probably bounce. And that's exactly happened now. So to be clear, I didn't think it was going to happen, but it did. So I got that wrong. But, you know, the flip side of it is I've been saying for well over 10 years now that everybody should own gold. So hopefully people already have gold. Hopefully they don't have to buy it right now when it's up you know, whatever it is for the year, 20% for the year, 25% for the year. The idea is to buy it 3, 4, 5, 6 years ago when it was beaten up. Now, do I think that the gold breakout is here for good? You know, I honestly don't know. I always thought that the dollar would break out first, and that didn't happen. I do still think when the dollar, the dollar is starting to break out, but I don't think the dollar has even made its move yet. And so when the dollar really makes its move, I do think that the gold will pull back. I do think that we'll get a chance to buy it at 1400, 1425, 1375, some, you know, back to that breakout level. But, you know, maybe we don't, you know, and kind of the trick in investing is, listen, you're never going to get it all right. I'm certainly never going to get it all right. And I've never claimed that I'm going to get it all right. I think the idea is to, you know, try to make as much money when you are right and not lose too much when you're wrong. So, you know, I've owned gold for over 10 years. So when I was wrong about it breaking out and it broke out, it didn't really cost me anything. Now, of course, I would have liked to be right. Don't get me wrong. I would have liked to make more on the move up. But if you look at it in the big context of things, I don't think anything has really changed other than the price yet. Now, it looks like gold is going higher. Maybe it will. But I'm still in the camp that I'm pretty sure we're going to get a pullback. I don't think we're going to 2,000 before we go back below 1,500. Let me put it that way. And I think we're going to get a chance to buy it around 1,400. And here's the thing. When it gets back to 1,400, it's not necessarily an automatic buy. Now, if you don't own any gold and we get that pullback, you absolutely have to buy some. Everybody should own it in their portfolio. But, you know, if you already have it in your portfolio and if you already have it in size in your portfolio, there's nothing that says you have to buy more now just because it's going up. You know, I've been on record before. My allocation to gold has ranged between 20 and 35% of my portfolio for the last 10 years. You know, you don't really need more than that. So even if it goes to 2,000, you don't have to buy more. But again, everybody should have gold in their portfolio.
Brent, let's move on to the stock market, because this is a place where so many people, myself included, have looked at this and said, what the heck is going on here? We've got crashing bond yields, classic recession signal. We've got inverted yield curve, classic recession signal. These are all reasons that, at least according to conventional wisdom, you'd expect stocks to go down. Brent, you've been pretty outspoken in saying that you've expected the opposite, that probably mostly because of a safety trade effect, that stocks actually had much further to go up from here. So I'd like to get an update on that view. Is that what's happening? Is that what's holding us up at what feels to me like very lofty levels in the S&P? And does that mean it's you're getting a late chance to sell short here? Or does it mean that we should get ready for much higher stock prices to come?
You know, I think you have to get ready for much higher stock prices to come. Now, if you have a bunch of cash on the sideline, maybe you wait. I think it's possible over the next 3 or 4 months between now and the end of the year, we will get a pullback and that'll be an opportunity to buy at better prices. But I don't think that we've seen the high. I don't think that you should be, you know, loading up on puts and waiting for the world to end. Because I honestly think, Eric, that, you know, I've been saying this for a couple of years now, and it's in macro, it's always so hard to get the timing right. And, you know, the timing is perhaps the most important piece. But if you can still be in the game when the move finally comes, you can do pretty well. And so, you know, I've been saying this for a couple of years, but it feels like it's finally coming, is that I think we're going to get this dollar melt up. I think we're going to get U.S. equity melt up with it. I think we're going much higher, but it doesn't mean in the next couple of years or in the next couple of months, we're not going to get a pullback to buy at better prices. But, you know, when I first started saying this, call it a year and a half, 2 years ago, I know a lot of people thought I was absolutely crazy. And listen, there's no guarantee that I'm right. You know, it's still possible that I get this wrong. But if I get it even a little bit right, I think the opportunities are pretty good. And I think when I was up in Vancouver with you in January, you know, I showed some slides about the, you know, inverted yield curve and how it's a definite recession indicator. And that's true, but that's always the first half of the slide. What they never talk about is the second half of the slide or the second slide. And that is that when you get the inverted yield curve, it typically takes, you know, I think it's 18 to 24 months before the recession actually arrives. But that's only the second slide. What they never, ever tell you the third slide, because what the third slide says is that 18 to 24 months is typically extremely good for equities. Almost every time that that's happened in that 18 to 24 months, equities has gone higher. So I'm not saying to ignore the inverted yield curve. I'm not saying to ignore the $17 trillion in negative yielding bonds. I'm not saying to ignore the downturn in the global PMIs. Listen, the stocks are not going higher because things are good. I think they're going to go higher because things are bad. But, you know, I've kind of used the example over the last year that if I'm a European pension fund manager and I'm looking around the world where to allocate assets, I'd rather buy a U.S. blue chip yielding 3% and get the currency appreciation than buy some European corporate. And, you know, just in the last week, we've seen the biggest pension fund in the world, which is the Norwegian Central Bank, come out and say that they are strongly considering and that they're actually recommending that the Sovereign Wealth Fund of Norway increase its size to U.S. equities. And that would be coming away from Europe. So, you know, I think it's starting to happen. And I think the next couple of years, I think a lot of people aren't going to believe what happens over the next couple of years. And again, I don't think that this is going to happen because stocks are cheap. I think stocks are not cheap, but I think they're going to get even not cheaper. I think valuations are going to expand. And I think this is really going to be a result of expansion of valuations and just, you know, money flows coming into the U.S.
And Brent, final topic I want to touch on, because we've just come on the back of 2 weeks of Peter Bukvar and Danielle DiMartino Booth talking about the future of monetary policy. And I think that a lot of people are looking more and more, including the President of the United States, pushing for a return to quantitative easing. Hey, we didn't do enough of this the last time around. Let's come back and do some more. And the way that most people see this, Brent, is you've got to support the financial market because otherwise the economy could collapse. And the solution, the cure, if you will, is quantitative easing. I think you've got a different view. So how do you see the cause and effect of QE and the effect on the dollar and interest rates and inflation and so forth?
Yeah, it's a great topic to touch on because I think this is so important. I talk to a lot of people who disagree with my strong dollar thesis. And one of the things that always comes up is QE. And they always insist that QE is going to come back and that's going to kill the dollar, or that's going to hurt the dollar. And I always say, oh, so then you do think the dollar is going to get stronger. And then they say, no. I think the dollar is going to get weaker because of QE. And then I say, well, the only reason they're going to do QE is because the dollar is getting stronger. I said, so I think the cause and effect is messed up. I think it's the dollar getting stronger, which puts pressure on the financial markets, which puts pressure on other countries, which puts pressure on not only other countries, but some corporate finances in the U.S. as well. And therefore, the Fed is going to have to come in. And, you know, part of the reason they buy bonds is to increase the supply of money and lower the price of the dollar. So it's really the dollar getting stronger is the cause of QE. It's not QE that's the cause of the dollar getting weaker. The first move is the dollar getting stronger. In other words, if the dollar was falling and getting weaker and weaker and weaker, they wouldn't need to do QE. The reason they have to do QE is because the dollar just keeps getting stronger despite all of their efforts. And so I think that that's something to really, really think about. If you think that they're going to do QE4 and then QE5 and QE6, then that means that you think that QE4 is going to fail and that QE5 is going to fail and they're going to have to do QE6. Well, the only reason QE4 and QE5 fails is if the dollar keeps going higher despite their actions. So I do think that people get the cause and effect messed up a lot. You know, monetary policy is the reaction. Monetary policy is not the cause.
Brent, trying to tie this view back to your equities view and bring this all together in one picture, would it be fair to say that that kind of explains, I think a lot of people would hear you say you're bullish on the dollar and bullish on stocks at the same time. And they might say, hey, you know, that seems to be counterintuitive. It's got to be one or the other, not both. It sounds like what you're really saying, Brent, is that it's the dollar moving higher that really is the primary factor. And the result of the dollar moving higher is they're going to have to resort to QE in order to contain the dollar to prevent it from appreciating out of control. And it will be that QE, which we all know is very effective in supporting asset markets, that's going to take stocks higher. Is that a fair summation to tie these views together?
No, I don't think that that's necessarily right. I'm not even convinced that QE is going to come back in the U.S., but if that did happen, that would also support it, but that's not necessarily exactly what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that the governments and the monetary authorities, they will do a number of different things to try and avert a dollar crisis or to try to bring down the value of the dollar. I'm not sure it's going to work, but if they do, my point is if they do have to resort to all those policies, including QE, it will be because the dollar is getting stronger. In other words, the dollar getting stronger is the cause of all of this stuff. It's not the other way around. It's not that the monetary policy is causing it. It's the dollar causing the monetary policy reaction.
And that monetary policy reaction, or those several different monetary policy choices that are available, all probably have the effect of supporting equity markets. So it's not just QE, but it's basically the dollar is appreciating. We've got a global dollar liquidity squeeze, which Jeff Snyder has talked and written so much about. That and other factors are pressing the dollar higher. It results in a policy response that can only support equity prices.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting how this happens. I mean, I think if people still don't get that there's a dollar shortage, I'm not sure what else is going to convince them.
Well, Brent, you can't persuade all of the people all of the time, but I certainly have become persuaded that the global U.S. dollar liquidity squeeze is the driver of so many things. And I agree with you that a lot of people don't really understand that that's the primary driver of so many things that we're seeing in markets. Well, Brent, I can't thank you enough for another fantastic interview. We look forward to getting another update from you next month. Today's All-Stars episode was made possible by TopTradersOnPlug.com. This podcast, which I highly recommend, is delivered to you by some of the world's leading practitioners and gives you an unprecedented insight into the world of trend following and other rules-based investment strategies, which have delivered outstanding returns for many decades. So if you want a different perspective on how to invest in today's markets without emotions and without predictions, go to toptradersonplug.com/macro. where right now you can claim a free copy of The Many Flavors of Trend Following. Check them out. You'll be glad you did. For the Macro Voices Podcast Network, I'm Eric Townsend.
That concludes this edition of Macro Voices. Be sure to tune in each week to hear feature interviews with the brightest minds in finance and macroeconomics. Please register your free account at macrovoices.com. Once registered, you'll receive our free weekly research roundup email containing links to supporting documents from our featured guests and the very best free financial content our volunteer research team could find on the internet each week. You'll also gain access to our free research library. And the more registered users we have, the more we'll be able to recruit high-profile feature interview guests for future programs. So please register your free account today at macrovoices.com if you haven't already. You can subscribe to Macro Voices on iTunes to have Macro Voices automatically delivered to your mobile device each week free of charge. Macro Voices is presented for informational and entertainment purposes only. The information presented on Macro Voices should not be construed as investment advice. Always consult a licensed investment professional before making investment decisions. The views and opinions expressed on Macro Voices are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of the show's hosts or sponsors. Macro Voices, its producers, sponsors, and hosts, Eric Townsend, shall not be liable for losses resulting from investment decisions based on information or viewpoints presented on Macro Voices.